from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. We're very, very pleased to have a return engagement from Alan Powell from Down Under, who has been doing some of the most sensational work on Sandy Hook of all, which is astounding to me since he's not even a resident of the United States. Alan, welcome back to The Real Deal.
Hello, Jim. Honor and a privilege to be back.
I'm just delighted. Since we have some 94 slides to cover, Alan, I'm happy for you to begin with slide number one.
Okay, slide number one. As we're looking at police evidence here, all of these slides we're going to look at are going to be police evidence. They're not going to be the ones that I got led to that we have shown on a previous program. Now, this shows that Detective Payette appeared at 7:30 on the day, on the fateful day. He's the guy who took the video. Now, I suspect that, I know that Detective Payette knows that this is a complete fraud, and perhaps to have it said on an internet show isn't much, but hopefully someone will tap him on the shoulder somewhere and say, what's the story with that video you took at the Lanza's place? Notice he didn't bother to turn up till 7:24 in the evening. He probably had something better to do today, given that this was just a drill. He also took a lot of video at night, which is a completely pointless exercise. He was out in the garden wandering around like a buffoon with a video with no light, no flashlight, floodlight on it. Hence showing that this was a drill. This was a drill. He also took a video during the day. This is because what they really wanted to happen under the FEMA SITMAN, the situation manual, was two sets of different circumstances for the drill. One videoed at night and one videoed during the day. Now, if we go to the second, by the way, there's no time record of when the police first attended Yogananda Street, or how they forced an entry, but we'll get round to that shortly. If we look at image number two now, we can see there that's fairly early in the morning. We can see if we look through the trees that there's one roller door up and one forced and broken. Now, logically, if that was broken when they got there, that means that Adam Lanza couldn't have driven his car out. If it wasn't broken when they got there, that means that they broke in that place. Another point is that you had the guy who delivered the oil, the fuel oil. Now, if he's walked around the back there and driven his truck up to fill up the tank, I think it highly unlikely that he didn't see that broken roller door there. Now, who did this and when? Who broke these doors and when? This is a big question. Because the official stuff says that it doesn't give you the time. When you look through the official police evidence, you've got all these statements. We've mentioned one chap. We might mention another later. But you have nothing in any of this police evidence to show what time they got to the Lanza place. Now, that's because from these shadows, we can see that it's probably early morning. I doubt very much that is December. If that is, at the earliest, it would have to be 10 o'clock for them to know that Yogananda Street is involved, because they wouldn't have known that Yogananda Street was involved until 10 o'clock, until they got the identification from the car, the black Honda, to say that it was registered to someone who lived at Yogananda Street.
And on the 14th of December 2001, Alan, the temperature was 28 degrees Fahrenheit and there was frost on the ground.
Well, there's no frost there, my friend. Now, we've also looked, and if we look down here, this is not a crime site yet. and to tell me that the police helicopter with no date, no time, indented on the picture. And it is a police helicopter. We know that because this evidence is from the police files. That's wrong. That's wrong. There's no yellow cordon tape anywhere at all. There's no police up the drive. There's no evidence of police there whatsoever. So something's happened a lot earlier than this. And whatever it was, it's left all of the doors open, smashed, as in a raid. Now let's look at the next picture, picture three. You might recall that when we talked about Sandy Hook before, we had a picture of the Lauren Rousseau. I actually included a picture of Lauren Rousseau's car here. It seems to have disappeared. But if this is the earliest that they got to Yogananda Street by helicopter, there's no Lauren Rousseau car there at all. And I revisited the picture of the Lauren Rousseau car, and it actually looks like it's parked in the car park at the school, not in the driveway here. That might be something for a future reference. Now let's go to the next shot. We've got that. Look, that's a big wide open door. There's no getting around that. That is an open door. We're looking through. We can see the stairs. We can even see the mat adrift there, the carpet adrift. Now, what we're supposed to be looking at, of course, is the house. But if we forget the house for the moment and we look at the two brown bushes in the front flower bed there, we see that in between both of them and next to each of the dead bushes is quite an amount of greenery. Now, if we look at the next slide from the door, we'll see that all of that greenery has disappeared. Now, if you can see it from a helicopter, but you can't see it in a shot like this from the front door, it's either been removed or the photographs are taken at different times. One is taken, obviously, when the greenery is there, and another is taken when the greenery is not. Now, I'd suggest that the helicopter shot there is taken sometime in February, well after the incident.
Alan, are you talking about photograph four or photograph three? I see more greenery in three than I do in four.
Well, go into photograph four again. Now, look at the flower bed just in front of the little pathway there.
I am.
You see two brown bushes, two brown flower bushes. They're
right.
Dead.
Right.
If you look between those two flower bushes, you'll see on either side there are, perhaps it doesn't show up so well here, but when you get the original police evidence and blow it up, there are two green flower shootings there. And they're quite large. You can see them from the helicopter. They do show up.
Okay, but I don't see them here, but yes.
But when you go to five, you can't see any greenery there at all. There's, apart from something that's probably got, it's on its last legs, I think. It looks to be three quarters of the way of the space between the two brown bushes. And This is where the nonsense starts here. Do you see all this dirt everywhere? On the steps, there's dirt inside. Though it doesn't show up so well, on the bush to the left, there's a large rut or scour. Now, that looks to me like it was made by somebody dragging something along through the bushes. Perhaps one of those things that you jam the door with, you hit the door with to open it in a SWAT raid. I don't know. But we've got all this dirt there. So somebody's come through the dirt or the dirt has been placed there, but there's definitely dirt. Now let's go to the next slide. Excuse me.
Well, the door, of course, has been forced open. I mean,
that's what we're supposed to look at. That's the thing to look at. Now here, the thing to look at as well is this other door that's
also forced.
Forced. And this wasn't any kind of a gentle forcing just to see if everybody inside's all right. All of the scrim curtain there is ripped. This has been done with force. Now, why would you do this to two doors? You wouldn't. Now, there's another thing to notice here. If we, and this is just a smaller side, but it shows how dopey these people are with their lack of continuity. If we look up on that wooden bookcase, there's a photograph. It's a photograph of Ryan just after his graduation. And he's got a graduation gown with a yellow stripe.
You're talking about the top shelf?
Yeah. There's a bunch of white books and there's a photograph there.
Right.
When you blow that up, that's Ryan's story with his graduation garb on, his mortar and his gown. And he's got a different gown on to the one that he's photographed in the other photograph. Now, he may have bought a different gown, who knows, but generally, out of custom, you're usually photographed in the gown that you graduated in.
One is enough, having participated in innumerable graduations. One is enough.
Yeah. Look, I hired mine. Now, let's go into picture 7. Now, once again, we've got another entrance. This is the basement door. Now, you'll notice that both of those doors have got latches on them. You can simply open them from the inside once you're in. But what these photographs show together is that there was a SWAT-type raid. It's not mentioned in any of the documentation. The documentation that I've got, and I've only been through 12 pages of about 3,500 so far, and they're all entirely inconsistent with themselves and internally. And you're not told when the police actually got to Yogananda Street. Now, that's a big, big omission. And something I wanted to say, we've got a part of a slide that was missing. The very, very first slide had part of the police record saying what time the police attended. It's not their chance. Don't bother looking for it. And what it says, that the state police responded at 9:41. Now, what does responded mean? Does it mean they picked up the phone? Does it mean that they sent an order that somebody attend? Does it mean that they got there at 9:41? We don't know. But whichever way it is, let's just slow down and take this thought away to a quiet place and digest it. If it means that their best performance at 9:41, whatever it was, means that 26 people were killed in reality, then their performance is shithouse. Their performance is terrible, and it doesn't augur well for any argument about taking the guns away from American citizens with which they protect themselves. If this is the best they can do, and it leaves 26 dead, by their storyline, take the logical thought away that they cannot prevent these things, and the only people who can are the people who are there at the time. This was a school. It's not completely unforeseeable schools might get attacked by nutcases. For none of those teachers to have a firearm, to be trained, and to have an idea how to protect the students in their charge, I'm saying, is negligence on their part. If it's not negligence, it's certainly extremely foolish. Now, anyway, let's go on to the next slide. That's my little lecture done with.
Points well taken.
But I say to people, on that again, I say to people, just go and sit quietly and think. What do you want to rely on? A phone call to somebody who says afterwards that they did the best they could, that 26 people died. Do you want to rely on that, or do you want to rely on yourself with a firearm? I know what I'd rely on. Anyway, let's leave that subject. Here we've got some more dirt. Wow, this is like Cluedo, isn't it? What are we supposed to be looking at now? Bear in mind, too, that this guy has come along during the day here, because we just saw through the door, it was daylight. So this isn't Mr. whatever his name was, Payette, turning up at night. This is a during the day game of Cluedo. We've got this dirt on the floor, and we've got these lines going up the stairs. What's this enigmatic line? Well, let's follow the line to where it goes. Next photograph. We've got dirt on the floor there, and we've got two lines. And then let's go to the next photograph. Here's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to concentrate entirely on this upstairs. We're being led upstairs by these photographs. We know this guy who's taken the photographs has been told there's a corpse upstairs in one of the bedrooms. Okay. So up we go. Next shot. Up the stairs. Now, as you would expect, if there's dirt outside, we've seen a couple of photographs of dirt here, there, and everywhere. If we look in this photograph, there's also dirt down by that green mat. There's also a piece of the wood from the door down there, which shows probably that the SWAT people went in that direction to the kitchen too. But look through the back window there. It's now nighttime. So we've got two sets of photographs, one for day, one for night. Now, if we have a proper look, this dirt on the stairs, it's been sprinkled there. I don't know about you, but when I walk, I usually walk 1 foot on a stair and then the next foot on the next stair. And it tends to leave a pattern of left, right, left, right, left, right, up the stairs if you've got something on your boots that fall off. I know this because my wife has kicked me up the arse enough times about it. These dirt instances are spread across the stairs. It's highly improbable that anybody would walk upstairs with a gait that requires their left foot to go across the length of the stair and then their right foot to go across the length of the stair.
Alan, are we supposed to infer that this loose wire running upstairs was there when the house was occupied?
Oh, you've just stolen my thunder. Who does that, Jim?
Who puts
loose wire on stairs except idiots?
Maybe a videographer who needs an electrical connection, but you'd think he'd have a power pack and he wouldn't even need that.
No, he's got to have some kind of connection with a story here. And I'll spoil it a little bit for you. The reason that this telephone line is going upstairs is because you've got to have the idea that you've got this nutcase killer who sits on the internet, you know, 26 hours a day, that he's got a den upstairs where he plans all his murderous activities. So you've got to have an internet.
This is just childish in the extreme.
It is. So you've got to have this internet connection. And if we went back to the other photographs, we don't need to, but if we did, we would see that the two wires coming around the bottom of the door there magically meld into one. Now let's go to the next picture. Now, this is complete idiocy. We're still being led by the nose here by this photographer. We've got two sets of carpets there, and under them we've got two sets of carpet. On one of the carpets, the grey one, the dirt is sprinkled. Now, let's just bring physics into this. Supposing the carpets were where they should have been, that would mean that the coloured carpets would be over the grey carpets and there would be no chance for dirt to be sprinkled on the grey carpet. It would be sprinkled on the coloured carpet. So why is the dirt on the grey carpet? Well, imagine the idiocy of having two carpets over each other on a polished floor, Jim. It would be better than a skating rink, wouldn't it? Especially at the top of the stairs. There's been no thought applied to this.
To promote falling down the stairs and breaking your neck.
Indeed. What's being promoted here is just a trail. You just have to follow the trail. And lo and behold, when we go to the next slide, what do we get? Well, we get what the Daily Mirror called the baby-faced killer's mass murder den of black psyops. That's what the Daily Mail called it.
Now, that's ridiculous.
It's marvellous, isn't it? I've got to say that again. The baby-faced child-killing mass murderer's den of black psyops. Now, that was the headline from the Daily Mirror. So what are we supposed to look at in here? Well, there's a forget what we're supposed to look at. This is supposed to be something like the Daily Mirror termed it, but forget all about that. And look at the little blotch of red there, which is a game controller. And underneath it, we see some more of the dirt. We don't see a track of dirt across that carpet to that point. This is probably because they're running out of dirt by now. So let's go to the next.
Are we supposed to believe that Adam Lanza came in trailing dirt so we can follow all of his moves by the dirt? I mean, this is so simple-minded, Alan. There would be no reason for him to have to go outside and trail in dirt. I mean,
this is just one of the stories from the Sit Man. You can have a variation of different stories. You could have something along the lines of from the Sit Man for the drill. You could have had something like Lauren Rousseau and Lanza storming that house to kill Nancy because of it. Just goes on. You've just got to use your imagination with these things. And the good thing is that the people that write these Sit Mans have got no imagination. So they write in cliches. And they do cliched things like put a clump of dirt next to a computer which has been taken apart. Now, the point is not to get inside the computer. The point, I think they're being very, very clever here. They open up the computer, they take off both of the side panels, and they pretend that what they show in these two pictures is the dirt that collects around the panels inside a PC. And what we can see there is someone's got some kind of powder. It looks very, very much to me like fingerprint powder. It's certainly not the kind of dust that I've ever seen in all of the computers. There are several hundred that I've taken apart. That dust is always a light brownish or a light grey. It's never white. But what have we got here? We've got footprints. Jim, this is like a game of Cluedo. This is not a crime scene. This is various things being thrown into the mix just so they can be photographed. So that a team can be taken along to a site, can be requested to do these things, photograph these things as an exercise, just simply to perform the exercise, probably to get some form of qualification too. Now, this is run by FEMA and DHS. It's run by FEMA so that they can, and DHS, so that they can get people who can set things like this up. There was once a time when forensics people were used only to document things that could be found at a genuine crime site. More and more in the future, you will have non-genuine crime sites where you'll need people as gullible as this in their professions who will do this kind of thing because they think misguidedly they're doing something for America. Well, here's news for you guys. You're not. You're betraying your country. You just don't know it. Now, let's go to the next photograph. Here, this is where the Cluedo continues. We've got all of this stuff on the ground. We've got...
That's a vacuum cleaner hose.
Yeah. Vacuum right. cleaner hose. We got a more dirt too. When you blow this, or if you get this from the correct source, when you blow it up, you can see that there's more dirt on the. Strangely, right. There's more dirt on the carpet, but there's no dirt on either that you can see on the carpet in the foreground or the pine floorboards there. Now, if we look to the left, we can see, oh dear. Gun cases. Oh, this all looks bad. But just let's take a step back. What we've got so far is we've got somebody who knows there's a corpse in the master bedroom, but has led us first into a computer room where there's no corpse. Why would they do that? Because they're more interested in setting up the picture of Adam Lanza than the real crime. And we know there wasn't a real crime. Now, if we look into the bedroom here, we can see a gun. We can see a gun on the floor, a rifle. Let's look at the next picture there, police charts. Here we are. We can clearly see that gun now, and we can see the dirt on the floor. So what's this dirt? Where does this dirt come from? Is it Adam Lanza? Is it the SWAT team that broke in? Does it come from some kind of imagined part of the sick man? I don't know. I really don't know. But none of it's genuine. Now, if we look at 17, now, what we're supposed to see here, according to some of the evidence by the cops, now, we're going to name a name here, and it's Sergeant Forrest Ruddy, who says that he went into the bedroom, and what he saw was a body of a middle-aged woman supine on the bed. Now, as far as we can make out from this, and you really need to download these pictures yourself and look at them, there's no body there. We've got three pillows and a towel. We've got a piece of red stuff in the middle, which is really, it's magic blood. It doesn't flow down onto the mattress. If we also look, we can't really show it in great detail in these pictures, but you can see it on your own computer if you want to go to the Connecticut police site and download all of this nonsense. This corpse also has no legs or feet, and it's supposed to be lying on its back. We see no arms, we see no face, we see no legs, we see no hair, we see no flesh at all, and more importantly, we see no blood. We see a piece of red cloth on a piece of white cloth. And, Sergeant Ruddy says that the orange and green thing just behind the steam iron there is an orange and green towel. I think it may be, but it looks more like an orange and green silk cushion when you get the photographs for yourself and look at them. Now, this woman is supine, according to Ruddy. What he actually says, I'll read it to you.
I can't believe she's supposed to actually be in that photograph, Alan. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't see anything remotely body-like there.
No, there isn't. There's a bundle of clothes in the middle. The coverlet is turned down halfway down the bed. There's nothing even that would look like a head up near the orange and green towel or cushion or whatever it is. But the deceased is covered with blankets from the waist down. She's wearing a polka-dotted pajama shirt. I can't see any polka dots there. There aren't any. Her head is turned south to its side. So the head would be towards us. It's not. There's nothing there. Now, she's got, according to the evidence, she's got three shots in the eye, and one through the forehead. Anybody who's ever been near any firearms and thinks of three shots in one eye is immediately going to say, well, that's going to make a mess. Yes, it is. There's going to be a fountaining of blood and brain matter out of either the eye that was shot or the other eye. And there are three shots with a .22 long rifle cartridge. The power of a .22 long rifle cartridge would be from 90 foot-pounds, I think, to about 120, depending on which cartridge you're using. But three of them takes us there into the range of having a fairly powerful the equivalent of a fairly powerful handgun cartridge.
Well, certainly would have blown a hole in the back of her head. No doubt.
These didn't. These were magic bullets. Jim, you'll find your CIA or your FBI or DHS, they're heavily into magic bullets. And if we go to the next picture, we'll see the magic corpse, not the magic corpse, but the magic woman. Now, she really is magic. I'm not disputing that, because in this photograph, she's got the sun to shine on her from three different angles. And she's also been able to have the blurry hair on her head from movement actually as a fixed shadow behind her. I mean, the incompetence of the people who are fixing these images is just mind-numbing. It would make the cat laugh. Seriously, it would. Let's go to picture 19. Now, picture 19 is down the side of the bed. I do not see one spot of brain matter, blood, bone, anything. Shooting someone in the head is a messy affair. There's nothing here to show that anybody got shot in the head. Now, if we go to the next picture, we see this little thing here with a little red dot, a little black thing with a red dot on it. And if we look at 21, the next picture, we see that it's not there. Now, I think what that thing was some kind of blood, fake blood applicator, because it doesn't show up anywhere else. It looks like some kind of a black tube with a bit of red on the end. Now, if we go to the next picture, this must be the most ridiculous forensics picture in the history of the universe. Since when do forensics people cover up bloodstains so that it doesn't appear offensive? The whole point of a forensics investigation is to show what is there, not to cover up what is there. Now, if we look briefly at the side table here in that picture, we see the only red we see there is a red glasses case. If we go back to Sergeant Ruddy's it's not even a testimony. I'll have to talk about this too. Sergeant Ruddy has given some kind of a statement here that's not a personal narrative, but it's added to police evidence. It says, it doesn't say, I entered the bedroom, I saw, I approached, anything of that sort. It's not a personal narrative. It says, the north of the closet is the master bedroom. There is this, there is that, there is a blood-like substance. Never says there is blood. And the reason they don't want to say there is blood is because they know there is not blood. There is blood-like substances. They can get away with using that phrase. Now, what it says is that there are small drops of BLS, blood-like substance, they call it. I call it bullshit-like substance, observed on all items on the nightstand. There are small drops of BLS observed on all items on the nightstand. Keep that in mind. Let's go to the next shot. Now, this is ridiculous. We have one splash that we see there by the bedpost, which has come from above and been splashed down. The same with the little tiny splash up towards, as far as we can see, the end of the bedstead. But the most ridiculous thing is this perpendicular drip of blood behind. Then it would have been behind the mattress, behind the bedstead. So a splash of blood has gone up in the air. It's managed to go down between the bedhead and the wall. It's found the wall, and there's been just enough of it to make a very, very thin red line. This is nonsense. Perhaps more indicative of something is the fact there that you can see that the telephone line plug has been ripped out just by the side of the bedstead. But as for this showing, there's no blood, there's no evidence indicators put up on the wall, on the bedhead. This is just nonsense. Now, here's the really funny one, the next one. Here is supposedly the deathbed. Now, you have to ask, well, that drip of blood that we just saw, how the hell did that get there when you had the mattress covering that part of the bedhead? You've got a pillow on the floor here that's got some pretend blood on it. You've got something that looks like blood, but to me looks more like a pomegranate, granite-coloured something or other. There's no corpse. There's nothing in the bed, but if you look, there's some kind of bump in the bed by which looks like something that was made to look like a body in the bed has been left in there. Why would the cover be up that far? Why would a forensics person leave the cover up that far? They wouldn't. There's another pillow in there. There's certainly not a body in there at that stage, not that we can see. And we can't see that orange and green towel or cushion that we saw earlier. So that's gone somewhere else. So are we convinced then, Jim, that there's a body in this bed or?
Oh, it's all ridiculous. It's ridiculous, Alan. It's so bad it's insulting.
Now, speaking of insulting, one of the people who put something on one of your sites, I know when you put this on YouTube, lots of people watch it, and someone said, well, who is this Alan Powell? Why didn't Jim Fetzer give him a rundown? So, listen, you don't need credentials or a CD to think common, CV to think common sense. You only need to look at some kind of phenomena and to question it. What do you think that piece of paper is there on the bottom of the ottoman? Jim.
Oh, it's the evaluation form for setting the stage.
Bingo. That's what I think it is. Now, the dead giveaway is this next picture where we see these people are so dopey that they don't realize what they give away. Look in not the mirror that we're supposed to be looking at, but look in the mirror to the left. And there we see, download this from the police site. Look at it for yourself. Blow it up. There we see a nice cross section of the bed up to the bed head on the right hand side, and we see not a trace of red. I mean, am I being dumb here or is there something going on?
Alan, these guys who set this up were not rocket scientists, and when you have somebody who's very astute as are you, you can shred it.
Well, let's go on to the next slide. Now, it was the sergeant who said that there was blood all over. There are small drops of blood-like substance observed on all items on the nightstand. I've observed four very, very tiny passive blood drops there. One is on the glasses case at the front. Two is on the piece of white paper under the drink bottle. Three is on the same piece of paper. And there's a teeny weeny one on the telephone. The telephone has been pulled out at the wall, but has been taken away from the cable very carefully. Now, if you pull a telephone out of the wall by its wire, you may be likely to overturn this bedside piece of furniture. Why has somebody gently taken out the wire and placed it over the bedside furniture in this fashion? I don't know, but it doesn't look normal. It doesn't look normal at all. I suggest that this might be some kind of an incident to, I mean, something that is done when a SWAT team goes into a place to isolate it. pulling the phone out of the wall. I don't know. I would think this kind of phone, a modern phone, there have been questions about whether they've got surveillance capacity. Perhaps that might be part of DHS procedure to immediately dislocate any phones for security reasons. I don't know. Someone somewhere does. And it would be great if someone could come forward and say, Alan, look, all of this stuff you're saying is absolute nonsense. Perhaps you need to just sit at home or go out fishing or something. But I ask all of these questions and I don't get any answers to them. Now, let's go to the next slide. Now, do we need proof that there were two sets of photographs taken? Well, here we have it. Why would you take a photograph of a mailbox during the day and a mailbox in the nighttime, the evening, 7:25 or whenever it was you got there? I don't know. There's no good reason. There's no good evidential reason. In fact, for most of this stuff, there's no good evidential reason. We have to go back to the reason why a forensics team exists. A forensics team exists to provide factual information, nothing else. And what it does is it gives factual information, usually to a prosecution, to a prosecutor, for a prosecution, so that facts can be established to prove a crime. Now, let's sit quietly somewhere and think. The woman was shot through the head. There's a rifle on the floor. Somebody was shot here. Why would you need two sets of photographs? One day, one night of it. You wouldn't, unless it was an exercise. Why would you need anything to prove that she was shot in the head other than the photographs of her being shot in the head? You wouldn't. Why would you go into Adam's room to look at what might be there to prove a crime? You wouldn't. Those things are irrelevant to either the 26 murders at school or the murder of a Nancy Lanza, if she actually exists, at the home. They're collecting too much. It's a snow job. They're giving us too much. Now let's go to the next shot. This is part of a statement by a police officer called Scott Wisner. And if we look at the fake fuel bill and at Detective Wisner's handwriting, we see, wow, that looks similar, except that one is a closed four and one's an open four. Well, I'm going to give Detective Wise, for 23 years and he resorts to this stuff, it's enough to make you vomit. I'm going to give Mr. Wisner a chance to explain, if ever it would come into the public domain, that he also uses closed and open fours. I've got the documents that show it.
The signature looks more like a John Blauer or something like that, Alan.
Oh, that's the judge. That's the judge.
Ah.
His signature is where it says debt detective.
Oh, yeah. I see
Scott,
it now.
It's Scott Wisner there.
I see it.
Now, there's other documents that Scott Wisner's printed in his own hand. That shows that he uses open and closed fours in exactly the manner of the way the date is written there. This fuel oil bill was discovered both during the day and at night. Why? Because the situation manual required it to be. All of this documentation that you see backing this up, this is all nonsense. This is all provided later.
It's all fabricated and faked.
It is all fabricated. Now, when I spoke earlier about Sergeant Ruddy, you'd think that his report would be pretty close to the date. Well, in fact, his report is getting on for 8 months later than the event. August. Let's go to the next slide there, Charles. What do we know? It's about this tree taken in December. It's got pretty big buds for having been taken in December. This is not December. This is late February, early March, and someone is telling us this. Now, I'm afraid I've agonized over this point for quite some time. Somebody within the police network is giving us clues here, and they're doing it quite purposefully. They're showing us for no other reason that there is a tree in bud. They're showing us this is not December. They give us another clue inside. Next slide, please. Anybody who's got even schoolboy passing French knows that printemps is spelt not with an M, but an N. This is something that's superimposed on the wall to show us that the season is wrong. Literally, the season is wrongly spelt, and literally, the season is wrong as well. Let's see the next slide, Charles. Here we've got a shot of the outside. What on earth would this do for evidence? It's irrelevant. It's entirely irrelevant. But what the guy is showing you is that there are two bushes here in bud. This is not December. What he's also showing you, and you have to enlarge it. Next slides, please, Sam. If you can get those to bud during December, good on you. I don't think you could. So this is late February, early March. And what has happened is that the bogus Sandy Hook event has happened, but too many people have asked too many questions. So there has to be some kind of story put in place. February or March, they troop out to the house to try and come up with some kind of a story. The murderer. They've got all the stuff from Sandy Hook, the stuff they don't show you. You never see any blood or, as you should, get any detail about even the dead. They don't even tell you the names of the dead. And they always refer to the blood as a blood-like substance. It's because the whole thing is faked. Now, they've got to quickly backpedal here to try and get some background on this this Adam Lanza guy. So they've got the house, so they've got to tarp the house up to make it look like he lived there. They took on too much. They took up on a big history. Now, this guy who's showing us this, I think he knows what he's doing. I hope he's moved on. And I hope he's not going to get into the trouble that I think he could get into for putting this evidence in the official police evidence. But it's all there for us to see. The only people we can blame for not seeing this evidence is ourselves. We are simply too stupid to see what is in front of our noses. Now, if this chap is still in the police, I'm very, very sorry, but you're in there, you've done it, and you've got to wear it. I'm sorry, that's my code. You do it, you wear it. And if I've caused you any danger, I'm very, very sorry, but you shouldn't have done this bloody kind of stuff in the first place. Next slide. You might remember, Jim, when we looked at the lands of the house, we had four different versions of this room. Can you?
Yes, yes, I remember.
That? Well, guess what? There's a fifth, and here it is. Next slide, please. This is the fifth version that I found. Next slide again. This is two versions of the same room. Next slide. That looks like a third version of it with some books, a crate of books there. Now, next slide. It's very, very interesting. We've got an earwig and a woodlouse, and they've been taped out of the garden. They've been trying to get under the door, but somebody's put sellotape. You recall when we looked at the doors, they were all smashed in. Well, somebody stuck sellotape along this to keep the door closed, and they've kept these poor little things from getting out. Well, here's the news about earwigs and woodlice. They're not in houses in winter. In winter, they're out in the backyard. That's when they mate. If you ever look for an earwig or a woodlouse in your house, you're going to have to start around February once they've done all their mating in the yard. But these are trying to get out. So when were those woodlice there? I don't know, but they're a very, very good indicator of when this thing happened or didn't happen. Now, the next shot. Chance is a bit of a giveaway as well. This is this picture I was talking about of Adam Lanza. Ryan Lanza, sorry. He's got a completely different gown on there in that picture up on the left. Right, sorry. And left. Than what he has on in his graduation. But also you see that the picture's moved here. And so is the clock. Now, forensics people don't go into scenes of crimes and change things around like this, unless, of course, they're completely incompetent. So we've got two setups here where somebody's just gone in and thought, yeah, this will do, except that, oh, let's just change that picture there of Ryan. There's no other explanation for this, because the clock is physically moved, so is the picture. Next picture, please. Now, this looks like nothing, but what it actually is two different settings, only slightly different. In one, there's a roll of paper towel in the background, and it's thinner than the roll of paper towel in the other one. The brown paper bag has also gone a bit delinquent and opened itself, and though I don't show it here, that silver canister that's up on the work surface there doesn't appear in the same photograph. You can look this up for yourself, people. I mean, it's all there. The next thing, have a look at the next slide. We've got under Adam Lanza's bed, which is absolutely pristine. Now, some people have said he's a weird teenager or a weird 20. He certainly is a weird 20-year-old if he's got absolutely nothing under his bed. Anybody who's ever had a teenager, this is nonsense. There's not even dust there. There's not even a spider web, a small spider web, a small spider. There's nothing there, nothing, as if the thing has just been photographed after it's been put there. Next thing we look at is the this thing. Get the picture, look for yourself. It's absolutely pristine. It's a makeup compact. Go and have a look at one your wife's got. They never look like this. They've got fingerprints on them, especially if they're this kind of shiny plastic. And they also have a lot of the compact dust around them. It's a fact of life. But this one's got absolutely no fingerprints on it. Nobody's fingerprints. Next shot. Here's a touch phone, supposedly belonging to Nancy Lanza, with absolutely no fingerprints on it. A touch phone with no fingerprints on it. Take that one away. Sit and think quietly. A touch phone with no fingerprints on it. Next one, please. But here's a knife with fingerprints on it. This is supposed to have belonged to Adam Lanza. Now, I'm not a betting man, but I got 50 cents that says that those fingerprints don't belong to an Adam Lanza, a Ryan Lanza, or any Lanza at all. I think they belonged to the FBI man who stayed at the Lambs' place setting it up in various ways, or the man who was sent there first to get it ready to be set up. And the reason I think that is because of the next slide. And the next slide is the FBI use target that was found behind the sofa in the basement. Now, we've gone through this before. I've said to you that somebody stayed in the basement. This sergeant says that it does not appear that someone sleeps in the room on a regular basis. Well, we've seen the bed. We've seen the bed made up on a previous program, Jim. We've looked at that. Now, for those who can't read, the little words on the bottom of that target are FBI use. FBI means Federal Bureau of Investigation, and these are the targets they use. Adam Lanza must have been then in the FBI to use these. No, the man who stayed in the bedroom was in the FBI, and he probably forgot that he went out one day for a bit of a shoot at a range, brought the target back and just stuck it out the way, and then somebody found it. And he thought, oh, shit, yeah, that's the one I... Oh, well, let's put that in anyway because it's all gun-related. We're trying to show how bad guns are, so let's throw that in anyway. But I'd like to know how Adam Lanza would have got use
of... Alan, we have just 1 minute before our break.
Okay, well, this is probably a good place to just hold for a minute because of somebody...
Okay. This is Jim Fetzer with my special guest, Alan Powell from Down Under, who's going through the Adam Lanza home again to explain how it was an empty house that had to be furnished to serve as a prop in the Sandy Hook scheme. We're taking a break now. We'll be right back.
We can now say with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Less than 3% of you people read books. Because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off and leave them off.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where I have a return engagement from Alan Powell from Australia, further elaborating on the studies he has done that demonstrate that the Adam Lanza home was in fact vacant and had to be furnished in order to serve as a prop in the Sandy Hook hoax. Alan, please do continue.
Are you familiar with this photograph?
No.
This is supposed to be Ryan Lanza being taken somewhere by his father after they've just left a building. I can't give any more description of that because that's all I know. That it comes from a video.
It's a Reuters. It's identified as a Reuters photograph.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a screen capture from a video. And once again, we're looking at the wrong person. Let's go to the next slide. And here's the handwriting of Daddy Lanza. And wow, doesn't it look like the handwriting that appeared on that little thing that
the sergeant?
Adam Lanza supposed to have written. Look at that. Now, what evidential consequence had either of these two documents to be in evidence? That's the question. The answer is nothing, not a thing. But what the document that's a birthday card or purports to be a birthday card proves, or tends to prove, is there such a person called Daddy Lanza. And with Daddy Lanza's writing on the little Adam Lanza.
This drawing on the right is childish. I mean, a 5 or 6 year old might draw something like
that. Yeah, it's supposed to be Adam Lanza when he's young. And that's Dad's writing on it. So that's kind of establishing a legend. Now let's have a look at the happy little family together here in a snap. The next one, 17.
47 chance.
Oh, 47, sorry. Well, here's Daddy Lanza. And there we are. We're all looking at Ryan in the middle. He's the center of attention. We're looking in the wrong place. This is what we're being shown. We're being shown someone who supposedly is a Ryan Lanza who establishes that there's someone called a Peter Lanza. And that's the Peter Lanza with him. By the way, as an aside, the guy in the background is pretty interesting. He props up in several places. He's got a program all to himself somewhere in the future. Now, have a look at 48. What you're not seeing is Peter Lanza. What you're seeing is someone wearing a mask. Look at the wrinkles on this supposed face. If you have ever seen anyone with wrinkles radiating out like a compass from their ear, then you have seen a lot more different people than I've seen.
And the ear looks completely fake.
Have a look at the eyebrow. Do you see the 5 or 6 lines where the eyebrow has been pasted to the person's real eyelid?
Yes.
And if you have a look at that big, thick line that comes out from the shirt there, It goes up, and just before it gets to the ear, there's a line that goes backwards. That's where part of the mask ends. If you look up behind the ear, there's part of an appliance there, whatever it is, that affixes the ear, or rather the mask behind the ear. But if you can say that you've seen somebody who's got wrinkles in their face in that fashion, you're much more experienced than I. I've never seen it. Now let's go to the next picture. Here we have the public pictures of Daddy Lanza. If the American public are not intelligent enough to see the second photograph on the right bears a false nose, then there is no hope for them. How does a man's nose grow to be the length it is from the photograph to the left to the photograph to the right? And the picture below, which of course is supposed to be Peter Lanza, one-time partner at Ernst & Young, though they won't confirm that he was, and then subsequently the tax partner, or sorry, the tax executive at GE, and the only photographs we can get of him are one from, say, 10 years ago, and two photographs of him being drunk, and one photograph of him pushing his son along the street into a car.
There was a purported interview of Peter Lanza in the New Yorker that was such an obvious shoddy piece of fiction, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that came from the literary fop, Andrew Solomon, who is a complete charlatan. I'd love to have him on your program, Jim, one day to talk to him, if you'd give us that space.
Great idea.
I challenge Andrew Solomon to come on your program and to give us details about this person that he says is Peter Lanza. Now, the idea that this man, having the professional details that he does, that the only pictures we can find of him, we can't find anything from the Wall Street Journal, we can't find anything from any business magazines, the idea that the only pictures we can find are these three, is just pure nonsense. Yeah. One of them in his cups, and one of him where he looks like actually a host from a television show.
It means this is a character in a script, not a real person.
It's a fiction. It's an entire fiction. Now, the next picture shows how
50
poorly,
chance.
50. How poorly people direct themselves to detail. Look at the fingernails of the man wearing the mask. They're very, very broad. They're very flat. They go across the complete top width of the finger. Compare them to the fingernails of the drunken buffoon, which are stubby and thin and longer. These two pictures do not show the same man. They show one man with a mask on, and the other picture shows some other man. I've done some more comparisons of fingernails, and I think I'll be able in the future to tell you who the man with the mask is. But anyway, is that the last one for this lot? So, what that bunch of photographs, I think, clearly... Well, let's take a different tack entirely. Let's say that all of those photographs are faked, Jim. Let's say I've spent 2 weeks or longer than that coming up with a lot of photographs that are faked so that I can get on your show and get some kind of fame from it. Even if all of those photographs were faked, wouldn't that be enough to call for an inquiry into what I'm saying, at least?
Of course, if there were any legitimacy to any of this, or if the Connecticut authorities were not corrupt to the core, Alan.
If not. Now, Monty Frank. Oh, I've got to mention Monty Frank. Wolfgang keeps sending me his emails of what he's doing, and more power to him. And if you can give him some money to fight these, I don't know what to call them, but these people, if you can give him some money to fight them, do it. He's pretty much a voice on his own at the moment. I sent Monty Frank a lot of this stuff showing what his customers, his clients were actually doing and what he knew they were doing. And of course, there's no response. Now, I think as an ex-solicitor, I'd say that that's a breach of his ethics. He's shown that his clients are perpetrating a fraud and that he's protecting them. I think that's a breach of his ethics. But anyway.
Alan, just for the benefit of any new viewers, during a previous show, you not only demonstrated that the Lanza home had to be furnished to serve as a prop, but that moving vans came to Sandy Hook School to refurbish it to make it look as though it were a functioning school, where you had some devastating images that were completely revealing. And here you're doing some further explanation of elements of the hoax at Sandy Hook School.
Yeah, this is the second set of the more you look here, Jim, the more you find. So here's a photograph. What do we see that's strange about that? Well, there's a FEMA truck up the top there. Now, you try finding what a FEMA truck looks like. The only thing I could find was the pattern for its paintwork. And the pattern for the paintwork that I found seems to match, basically, the pattern on that truck. It's a white truck with a big blue stripe on it. I'm saying, until somebody tells me different, that that's a FEMA truck. I'm also saying that this is a shot, because I know it's a shot taken when there was no mortuary there. I'm also saying it's very early in the morning. I'm saying that because of the shadows of the cars. These are very, very simple things. There's also two black cars that appear to be Hondas. There is one there in the no parking area, and there's one behind it. That's important later. Let's have a look at the next one. This is an extremely beautiful picture. I wish it didn't have that 94 evidence marker, the shell, or the, I don't know what you call it, the right angle square thingy that it's got there. Why is it beautiful? Because right at the very top, it shows us some vegetation, still green, that has fallen off of a bush. And we can time exactly when the photograph was taken from that and from the lovely assortment of brown, yellow, and green leaves on the floor, on the ground, sorry. And I don't mean the bits of the bush up on the right side there. Get this image from the police evidence, blow it up to full screen, and there's these marvelous little pieces of fallen leaves that have still got green and yellow on them. And that plant that's just above the 46 marker looks like it's some kind of long-leafed plant that has only just started to decay into winter.
So I'm the 94 marker.
Yeah. I'm saying this is November. And
Wolfgang thinks the fake, the staged photograph of the string of kids was even taken in October.
Oh, well, I would say October. I wouldn't argue him because I don't know. One of your listeners or watchers has contacted me to give me some information about winter and Connecticut when the frost comes down and when it leaves, and that's quite important for things like this. Now, the next picture shows us the mortuary tent there in the morning. And the flag looks like it's at full mast. Well, we know that every other picture of the flag after the event is down at half mast. We also know that if it's early morning and there is a picture, or rather there's an image here of the mortuary tent, this has to be after the 14th. The mortuary tent couldn't be there early in the morning on the 14th. I'm saying this is 10 o'clock-ish. If it's December in Connecticut, and I'm saying that mortuary tent couldn't have been there, otherwise it would have to have been there directly after the shooting. Now,
I think this is the first time I've seen the mortuary tent, Alan, which is rather stunning to me.
Yeah. Where did that come from? Did it just sort of fly out of the air and land there by itself? No, it didn't. And this is the terrible thing that's happening in your country, Jim. The Department of Defense is also involved in things like this, and that is where that mortuary tent came from.
And it's very odd anyway, Alan, because allegedly all the bodies were left in the school overnight and only removed in the dead of night.
Supposedly, which doesn't fit with chief examiner's medical practice. That's not what's done.
No, I know. It's all ridiculous. It's all ridiculous.
Now, let's have a look at the next slide. I think this one is a surreptitious slide. I think somebody's crept in there and seen something's going on and taken a photograph. And what he's just showing us is those people lounging around, probably before the drill. And we see two black Hondas there. And in the foreground, which is more interesting, we see really a kind of a fall scenario there, with some plants just dying, some green and brown leaves, but we don't see December. It's not December again. Now, next photograph. Now, this character who claims to be a witness to, I've read different versions of it, 4 or 6 kids who suddenly appeared out of nowhere on his green.
Oh, you think this is Gene Rosen?
This is Gene Rosen, yeah.
Without his glasses.
Where are his glasses? I don't know. Where is his integrity? We can ask lots of questions about him. The thing to notice here, of course, is not Gene and his very, very bad acting. He probably should have put some pepper in his eyes before he pretended to cry. What we see is yet another Honda. We've seen two down at the school, and we see one behind Gene. And what was he doing? Giving it a wash? What's that big white towel over the windscreen, over the side window for? Well, let me hazard a guess. This Honda is one of three that was supplied to the school for use in the situation manual activities. They wanted three because they were going to do various things, various scenarios, just like at the Lanza home. Now, I'm saying that one of the Hondas that was used is behind Gene. And I think as part of the situation manual, it had to have passenger's window smashed in because of some detail in the situation manual. Now, we go next.
That's the driver's window.
Oh, that's the driver's window. Of course it is, yeah.
Well, yeah.
It makes not any difference, but just shows what an idiot I am.
Well, I don't know about Australia, but in the UK, of course, we drive on the opposite side of the
street. Same in Australia. We've got the fifth wheel on the other side. And the next photograph is very telling.
I thought it was very odd when I put it up because we had three license plates. Is that a triple exposure?
No. It's the three sets of magnetic plates stuck on the back of one of the Hondas until they decide which Honda's going to do what.
That's pretty bizarre, Alan. That is really bizarre.
Okay, I'll withdraw it if it's bizarre.
No. What I mean is that they should have been so blatant about this. It's just stunning.
Oh, I don't think they knew that anybody got this. I think this was taken by the same guy who took the other surreptitious shot. I think he was just there and took a quick couple of snaps, and then someone told him to piss off quickly. That's what I think happened to that guy. Now, let's go on to the next shot. Well, why do I like this shot? Well, I like this shot because of all of the lovely bushes there, which again show me it's not December. And if we had a nice botanist from Connecticut who could tell us, given the range of plants there and the condition of their foliage, if they could tell us or tell you when it looks like this photograph was taken, we'd be streets ahead. But what I also like about this photograph is that it's got the reflection of a FEMA van in the window. Or a FEMA truck.
Yes.
Now, with these shots, apart from the two that I've told you are surreptitious, we're using only the police evidence itself that's available to anybody for them to download from the police site or anything that's available on the internet when you do a simple Google search for Sandy Hook. Now, the next photograph shows us that this paradigm of, oh, that one needs to be really, really blown up a bit. But when you look at the blueberry there, or blackberry, or whatever it's called, I don't know. I've never had one of those, never thought that I'd want one. It's got no fingerprints on it at all. So it's caught the same disease that the other one had at the Lanza House. Unrealistic. The iPhone at the Lanza House has got that same shine to it. Nobody has got a touch phone or a BlackBerry that has got absolutely no fingerprints at all on it. Now, next one. We looked at this last time, but this shows how dumb I am. I've been looking at these pictures for a couple of weeks, and I hadn't realized that one of them shows the designation of this Bushmaster as being an E2S, and the other one shows it as an E25. So I missed
that. Wow. Nice.
I missed that one. I'm sorry.
Two different weapons.
Now, number 10, somebody said on one of your sites that they couldn't make out some of the pictures. So I thought this one had to be shown again with another explanation. The first Bushmaster picture shows it as having an R in the circle. The second shows it as having an H in the circle. And the third shows it as having an X in the circle. These are people who are not familiar with firearms. These are people who are not familiar with the registered trademark symbol. Now, the next one. Oh, by the way, these images and an explanation have gone to Stephen Sadensky, the Attorney General, and I've had nothing.
No, he was the state attorney from Danbury who conducted the investigation. Yeah.
Had nothing from him, nothing at all. Now, let's have a look at this image. This image is part of a map of what supposedly happened on the day. Now, let's go to the next slide, and let's give this fellow some accreditation. TFC, what's that? Technical Forensic...
Consultant
or cretin? Joseph J. Russo. I wonder if that's a person who's related to the Thomas Russo who set up Sandy Hook in the Connecticut government who refuses to answer my emails. I wonder if he's related to him. Whoever Joseph Russo is, he ought to be shot himself because he's been given all this information. It's nothing he's seen firsthand, and he's come up with this collision analysis and reconstruction squad graph, or what would you call it, a map, a drawing, a pretendy drawing?
Diagram.
Here's a close-up diagram, yes. When we look at the next one, Charles, we see, oh, look at that figure in an almost fetal position after putting a 10-millimeter slug through his bonds. You get anyone in a fetal position after a 10-millimeter slug has gone through their head, they've been arranged that way. Look also at the position of the Bushmaster down in the lower third of the picture, which very, very conveniently is pointed at a 50-degree angle to the window, which means that it was probably shooting by itself. It's a magic one. Now, if we look at the knees and feet of the pretended fetal Well, there's another thing. Here he's fetal, and in some of the reports from people like Wisner, he's lying supine. You can't be both. You can't be fetal and supine. But we've got these first-hand images of people who say he was fetal, and someone says he was supine. Other people say the firearms were on him, or other people say the firearms were around him. But we've got, I presume, the Glock up there, that little right-angle thing near room 10. So he shot himself in room 10. The cartridge from the Glock was expelled. It would have been expelled to the right. It was expelled to the right, rolled out of the door. And do you see those two dark rectangles? It came to there, parallel to the wall, actually up against the wall. We not only have magic bullets now, we have magic cartridges too. Now, look to the extreme left of the picture and you'll see Mr. Russo's indication of the directions that the bullets left the windows. He's got them going everywhere. Well, let's have a look at the next slide and we can see, and we've looked at this before, we know that the bullets only exited that classroom at a perfect 50 degree angle to the window. We've seen them. We've seen the pink straws put through the bullet holes, which all indicate a firing area of 50 degrees to the window. Now, the next picture is really, really telling. What can you tell me about the length of the shadows there, Jim?
Well, they appear to be in the afternoon. Am I wrong?
Well, they'd have to be late afternoon or early morning, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Now, if we take the corner of the school to be north, and the shadows are going towards the west, that means the sun has just come up in the east. This is very early in the morning. This is before anything has happened. And it's so early that you've got the SWAT team and their little truck right at the very bottom. Do you see?
Yeah.
That thing that looks like a little fire truck or something?
Yeah, actually, since this is before an event, what in the world are they doing there unless this was completely
What's the SWAT team doing there at, I'm going to say, 7 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
On the morning of the event?
Yeah.
Also, let's have a look at this. If this is after the event, then we've got entirely the wrong area cordoned off as a crime scene. We should have from, how can I describe this? Look at the big lump of green and brown on the right-hand side. Now, imagine that's a triangle. Well, it is. And then go to the apex of the triangle and you'll see three grey cars there. And they're pointing towards the school. Now, we've seen before photographs of pretend blood between two of those cars and those cars cordoned off with yellow cordon tape, police tape. But that's not where it ends. Go down to the very bottom. If we go to the little SWAT truck, and then we go up a bit and we see a little black car there, that's got yellow tape on it too. So, in fact, the whole of this car park should be a cordoned off police area. It's not. And it's not because there are only limited areas involved in this drill. Now, so we've seen the little SWAT truck down the bottom there. Let's go to the next one. And there he is again, for anybody that's got any doubt, a bit later in the day. And we can see the toilets there clearly. This is on the day of the event. Let's go to the next shot. This is the SWAT truck up at the fire station later in the day. To me, that looks like it could be midday. But then I'd have to say, what's a SWAT truck still doing at the scene of an offence a couple of hours after they've done what SWAT people do? They don't hang around and do things. They do their bit, then they go, and get on with other SWAT things at other places. Well, they were there early in the day. Let's have a look at the next slide. They were there early in the day, and there they all are before the sun has actually hit the cars in the car park. You can see the top of their SWAT truck in the left of the picture, and you can see their little heads above the cars. Get this picture yourself, blow it up, and have a look. I am not misleading anyone. They were there very, very early in the morning. And if I'm not mistaken, they're all congregating there, just talking about what they did at the Lanza House. Next picture. And here they are in the afternoon. So obviously it's the afternoon. Look at the shadows on the, or the back of the shadows on the shoulder of the police officer in the left there. This is at least mid-afternoon, and they're just hanging around. Again, that doesn't happen. Next picture. Now, because this picture is so small, it doesn't really show you some of the important... No, back one. But there's two little sheds beside the school. Note, too, that there's no mortuary here at this stage. And this is definitely very early in the morning. So we've got no mortuary. And we've got the doors on the two little sheds are actually open. Again, get this picture yourself, blow it up to full size, and you'll see that those doors are open. We also have video of later in the day on the event of those doors being forced. Now, why are those doors being forced later in the day when they're open earlier in the day? Well, because they were closed so that the drill could then run that they force entry into those two sheds. Nothing else explains it. In the chronological order of things, if this is sometime after those two doors have been forced, you'd expect to see shorter shadows and a mortuary tent there. Next picture. Now, what's wrong with this picture? Well, lots of things. First of all, we've seen this before, Jim, and we've spoken about this. This doesn't seem to be a smashed window that's giving reflections, and we've talked about that. But I'm obviously a lot more stupid than I think I am, because the thing that I didn't see and that's so bloody obvious is shown in the next picture. There's some kind of a display going on in classroom 12. We can see the big screen there lit up in the dark room. They're watching something. What are they watching? They're watching some kind of audio-visual presentation telling them what they're going to do in this drill. Can you give me any other explanation why there would be some kind of projection in that room? I've thought long and hard on this, and I can't think of one. And the next picture gives us some kind of an answer. Let's have a look at this next picture. This is from one of the 12 documents that I've looked at so far, and it's part of the radio traffic. And they're talking about some other officers that are involved in this. And those, they're Bethel. They're from a place called Bethel. And the dispatcher says, Roger, do those Bethel officers have our frequency? This is so that they can get in on the drill and get in on the radio traffic and be told what to do. So Newtown Lieutenant Van Healy says, they do not have our frequency. There should be some spare radios in the classroom. There should be some spare radios in the classroom. Think about that. Which classrooms come already equipped with police transceiver radios, Jim? Drill ones. No,
yeah,
other sort.
Sure.
Where a drill is being set up, that's where you've got spare bloody radios. No other place. I've took my kids to school. I didn't see any police radios in spare or otherwise in any of the classrooms. Next picture. Another piece of stuff. I haven't looked much into this radio traffic at all, so I haven't found much yet. I think these are the only two pages I've looked at, but what I found there is bloody disturbing, I think. Sergeant Bahamondi, I am in the school and can confirm that the school has been checked three times over and they are doing a fourth. Four clearings of a school. Are we really supposed to believe that these people, these police agents, enforcement agents, are so incompetent that they have to clear a school four times? No. No, we can't. But we can believe it if it's a drill that they're running over and over. And how do we know that the state attorney's in on this? Well, this lovely little piece at the bit at the end there, Officer Silver said, state's attorney is at headquarters. State's attorney is at headquarters. So we know Sadensky is in on it. Next shot. CERT, do you know what that is? Computer Emergency Readiness Team. What is it? It's a bunch of geeks who like to think that they're part of the military-style police authorities in your country. And they're going to jump into it once there's been some heinous act, and they're going to get computers back up and running, and they think they're some kind of anonymous. They're not. There are a bunch of amateurs who get invited to these things, so they feel important. And one of the cars, lo and behold, has got somebody from CERT who brought along their little baggie with them, thus indicating yet again that it's a drill. Okay, next picture. Now, the sun is coming from behind. The sun is in the east. The shadows on this truck show us that it's very early in the morning. And who is standing behind the man in the blue suit? I bet you 50 cents you can't place him, Jim.
I can't quite make him out, but I figure he's someone we've seen earlier in the slides.
It's Dr. Carver.
Oh, really?
It's Dr. Carver. And there he is. Well before the deal gets going, he's on scene. Nobody's dead. The flag isn't down. It's early in the morning, on the day. What's the chief medical exec doing there?
Good one, Alan.
Next shot. And if that wasn't evidence enough for you, there's an aerial view of the fat idiot. And I'm not sure whether he uses a walking stick or not, but that's certainly a walking stick beside him on the top of the wall. Another thing wrong with this, well, all these guys milling around. They're milling around in a crime scene. They've got all their little gizzard nose and doodads that they need ready for the drill out beside the truck there on one side and at the back. There's a little aside here too. These two black jumpers or whatever they are supposed to be, Jim, at the side of the Honda. So what did he do? Did he have two jackets on and over his, you know, his the stuff that he was wearing for his magazines and the rest of it? And then he got out, he took both of those off, threw them down, went over to the door, shot through the door, it didn't break, or the window rather, it didn't break, went back to his car, got a 12-gauge, put a 12-gauge breaching round through the window, which there is evidence of in one of the pieces of furniture inside, went back to the car, put the shotgun in the back seat, and then went into the school. This is nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Next picture. This is completely overlooked by everyone. See that teeny weeny weeny blood dot on the window?
Yes.
And that no one was shot outside. How did that get on the other side of the glass? I don't know. It's not referred to anywhere. If it was Lanza's, well, bingo, take that. Get the DNA job done on it and prove that Lanza existed. You can't because he didn't. Next shot. This is a lovely shot. Do you see those big letters there that spell out part of the word United? Reflected in the window there?
Yes, moving van.
Yeah, this is from police evidence. This is not something that someone led me through to that I had no understanding of how I was getting there. This is in police evidence. That is part of one of the huge United vans reflected in the window. Next shot, please. Now, here's an incredibly dopey piece of CGI. When I first looked at it, I thought it was a bit sus, because it meant that Adam Lanza would have to be standing right against the blind and shooting at a very, very acute angle into the blind. But lo and behold, they took that image and they also put it in a couple of other places. They put it in the, it's in the first, it's in the second, it's in the third. And lo and behold, the next slide shows that it's also in a fourth image, all with the same exhibit number, 96 or whatever it is. This was an exercise just to show that they could fake these kinds of things. Now, let's go on to the next slide. Somebody said that the stuff about the, oh, again, it's probably a bit too small, but this shows us that there's two pins on this Sig Sauer, which are bright metal, on one of the firearms and are actually blackened screws on the other, and it's got a different trigger as well. So somebody didn't bring along the first Sig Sauer, and what they had to do was put some kind of a different serial number, but it had some minor differences to it. So Sadensky knows this as well. I've given him the details of this. No response whatsoever. Next picture. This is from one of the affiants. This is from Joseph Vockett, who says that the SWAT were there from 9 until 11 at night, and that there were two females located inside the main office. And after that, there was a demand that the school be researched. At what time was all this? This is quite important, because it's got this liar of a woman who's called herself Sally Cox, who says that she was in there for 3 hours. I mean, the idea that you could have 3 searches of the place with SWAT teams calling out to each other, clear, clear, and she didn't hear it. 3 times? This is just nonsense. The American public's being treated like imbeciles to have this stuff put in front of them. Next picture. Now, this is quite interesting too. The man standing up. Well, let's look at the next photograph. Let's look at a close-up. It may not show up properly, but this man's wearing a mask too. If you look at the top of his ear, just where the arm of his glasses would go, you'll see that there is a dark line down, which goes down and slightly forward. You'll see that there is a line that comes from basically the top of the lobe structure and goes forward. There's also 2 grey lines on his face that don't show up very well here, But if you look at his neck, there's a direct line that would, if his head was straight up, would be perpendicular, straight down. Now, he's got a wig on, sure of that. And he's also got, I think, because of these 9 unaccountable lines on his face, I think he's also got a mask on too. And there's also
I found the mask claim regarding Peter Lanza more convincing than this one, Alan, but I do agree he appears to be wearing a wig at the least.
Well, the problem with these images is that when you get them from the site itself,
yes.
They're pretty good definition.
Pretty high quality, and when we translate them into slides and put them up and size them and all that, we lose a lot of properties.
They do. But you've still got to explain how these lines, which don't coincide with what we know to be normal facial lines, appear on his face. Next shot. There's just a sort of a comparison between the two. Now, I would put money on the Peter Lanza one. I'd certainly put money on that. This other one, I'm 60% sure because of the lines that are anomalous. And that big line up the neck, I can't really explain that one either. But if they were using masks at one scene, why not at another? Now, here's someone who should have used a mask. The next slide. This poor lady who's at the scene of this terrible tragedy. She's so sad. No, she's not. So that's the next slide. It's our old friend Alicia. There she is again. She pops up everywhere. She must get quite a lot of money from the FEMA organization that sets these things up. Now, just so that we can know exactly who this woman is, here's part of her own resume that she stuck on LinkedIn. There is no end to the stupidity of these people. I think now she's probably employed by FEMA. Or DHS, I don't know. Let's go down to slide 40. And here's a combination comparison there of the two types of footwear. One that the policewoman, do you remember we saw when we looked at Sandy Hook, Alicia was actually looked very much like the police lady with a blonde wig on. Here's a comparison of the same sort of footwear between this lady who's sad at this iconic site and the lady who was the policewoman in the car park. Now, here's a big surprise for you. Next shot. This is supposedly a neighbour. A neighbour who said, well, only he said anything on video, and he said that he didn't see much of the Lanzas. I think he's supposed to be their next door neighbor or something. But he saw not much of them at all. And I'm sure that the character there with him couldn't say anything even if she wanted to. Why? Because she's a dummy. She's just being held up there in a position to look like his daughter. This is the same sort of dummy we saw at Boston. Do you remember we saw the lady, or we thought it was a lady, but it was a dummy. She had Boston General Hospital initials across her face. Other than that, she looked quite realistic. This one too. The thing that gives it away here is the terrible wig that they've stuck on the dummy. And if this person is the person, she can always contact me and say, Alan, you're an idiot. I'm a person. I'm not a dummy. Look, here's me. She won't. She is a dummy. Next picture. Well, this is classroom 3. Nothing happened in classroom 3. So why is there the little sign that's been handwritten up on the right side of the picture which says, need bleach? It says need bleach because they need bleach to show, as part of their FEMA drill, the effect of oxidizing bleach on DNA, which removes it. So given that this is a course, it's a drill course, That's the only possible reason anybody would write need bleach on this classroom, which is being used as a demonstration room. We know nothing happened, according to the official story, in classroom 3. We also know that no teacher, if it was a school, would write on the wall, need bleach. Only people who need bleach for a specific reason would do that. And in this case, the people who were demonstrating how to remove DNA as part of a forensic exercise. Next picture. Look at this. Everybody and their dog in the crime scene. Everybody and their dog. There's a black car that might be the third Honda beside two people. I wouldn't put money on that, but this is early in the morning and there's no mortuary tent. Again, there's no mortuary tent. It also doesn't look like they've put out the yellow tape yet. So what's a helicopter doing there? How would a helicopter know that early in the morning that there was something going on at Sandy Hook? Well, the helicopter's going to be used later to take photographs of the Lanza place. Next shot, please. Now, look at the angle and the height from which this picture was taken. I think it was taken from the FEMA truck. I think it's got the same arrangement that this Connecticut State Police truck has got on the top there, that tripod thing. And I think that can be used to document what goes on. And in fact, I have a video of the scene completely.
Now, Alan, if you look at the windows of the classroom in the background with the candles, they're not shot. There's not one that's shot out.
Jim, we've been all through that.
I know, but there are those who are watching this, Alan, for the first time.
This is further
confirmation of fraud, because the Connecticut State Police are only going to be there after the event, and yet the windows are not shot out there, which, of course, had to have happened during the event if it were authentic, which means this is a powerful proof that the whole thing is a sham.
Well, wherever you see the white candle still in the window there, they haven't drilled the holes at a 55-degree angle into the window frame to simulate bullet shots. Wherever you see the flag up, the exercise hasn't started. Once the exercise has started, the flag is at half mast. All of the images I've found correspond to those two factors. Anything else, and you can tell when it was basically, whether it was before the hoax or after the hoax, basically by the windows or by the flag. Now, how long have we got, Jim?
Well, we've got 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay. What's the important thing about this? This is only one hoax of potential other hoaxes that will be played before the American public to continue this trope of terror and fear in which they must remain. Otherwise, they will do things like start questioning their government. You've had, since 9/11, you've had, 15 years. Can you really say that life is any safer in America or more dangerous, come to that, than it was beforehand? No. What you're being shown are these elements like Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, what else? The Aurora, and this reporter supposedly being shot recently. Now, I think that's fake too.
Oh, yeah, but no doubt about it. In Virginia, completely ridiculous.
What you need to have, or what some people think you need to have, is a continuing meme, a continuing trope of violence, so that you're fearful. And what this is heralding, and now I'm going to sound like a tinfoil hat, is your fascist state, which is already there, but is just yet to be accepted. during this last week, I can see we've got very little time left. During this last week, I have been documenting the arrangements between FEMA and charities, commercial concerns, other entities that really shouldn't have anything to do with the federal emergency. Who is the head of FEMA? Obama. What power does this give Obama once a federal emergency is declared? Well, he becomes the person who tells everybody what they do. If he does not have that power constitutionally, he gets it through contract.
Alan, I think much of what you've been doing this evening is fine-tuning your previous presentations. I'd like to encourage everyone who is new to your work to go to The Real Deal, episode number 80, Explosive New Revelations About Sandy Hook, in which you really just blew the case apart by demonstrating that the Adam Lanza home had been empty and had to be furnished, where you document the stages, and that the school had to be refurbished, even showing moving vans, bringing material in, moving stickers on some of the classroom identification signs and the like. So for those who are new to this, begin with The Real Deal, episode number 80, Explosive New Revelation About Sandy Hook. You won't be disappointed. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guest, Alan Powell, once again, and all of you for listening.